Good morning, everybody. Pardon the scratchy voice there. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is 3K12 Education Talk Radio on the 23rd of February, 2022. And it is a pleasure to have you here. Also a pleasure to have a wonderful guest today, Dr. Anantha Duraiappah. Excuse me. Dr. Anantha Duraiappah. Okay. And Dr. Duraiappah is the director of the UNESCO Mahatma Gandhi Institute of Education for Peace and Sustainable Development, all right? And they're very interested in the emotional aspects of learning, i.e. social-emotional learning, which is one of the things we really specialize in. So it's an absolute pleasure to have Dr. Duraiappah here, and we'll bring him on in just a second. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. That is our home website, all about equity and access. Our online journal, Equity and Access, is there. You want to read it? I hope you do. Just go over, click on the cover. It's a brilliant issue, this current one of our journal. All of our podcasts are over there. And, of course, we have a link to our other website all about social-emotional learning, which is called SEL Today. That's seltoday.org. So check it all out, actually. The home website, ace-ed.org, will take care of everything for you. All right, and without further ado, let me bring on, there we go, Dr. Anantha Duraiappah. Dr. Duraiappah, it is an honor to have you here, sir. I'm Larry Jacobs.
Well, Larry, thank you for having me. And I was impressed with that really fast learning trajectory where with the third round you got my name perfectly right.
I really tried, okay? And I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. Anantha Duraiappah, okay? And well, tell us about the Mahatma Gandhi Institute of Education for Peace and Sustainable Development. That is beautiful. And I just want to say that UNESCO, and I say the word, everybody knows UNESCO, but I want to make sure they understand it's an acronym. Let me just give the words. The United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. That's UNESCO. Under that, Dr. Duraiappah's Mahatma Gandhi Institute for Education. Tell us what that does, please.
So Larry, it's what we call a Category 1 Institute of UNESCO, which means it's an integral part of UNESCO, but we have the luxury of having some autonomy in terms of the way we do our work, and especially on the intellectual side. This is the youngest of, I think, 7 institutes. It was inaugurated in 2012 with a very generous support from the Government of India. And you know what excited me when I applied for this position is the whole the whole name of Mahatma Gandhi. Gives us this aura and stuff. Yeah, great man, and then a lot of things to learn.
I just want to say, since you brought that up, there are two really great good men, in my opinion. There are many more, but the top are Mahatma Gandhi, okay, and Nelson Mandela. Okay, and those two changed the world. All right, they're standouts. Okay, so please continue. I just had to get that out of there. Okay,
so great. So, and Gandhi stood so much for peace and the nonviolence approach. Yeah, he just lived it, and then of course he had some interesting views on sustainability as well. So this institute was inaugurated in 2012. We really started working in 2014. But, you know, Larry, when you look at the landscape, there are so many institutes on sustainability and peace and all the education. So we figured, what would we do something different that would contribute and really help the younger generation, the children out there? And we then looked at Gandhi's life and sort of saying, so how did he get there? It was a whole lifelong experience, you know. He always says, "To know me is to live my life." Yeah. And then we were inspired by some of the stuff coming out from neurosciences, and I saw an TED talk very early on by V.C. Ramachandran, one of the greatest neuroscientists. You know, the chap talked about phantom limbs and so forth, and he coined this word, Gandhi neurons. and he was talking about mirror neurons and empathy. And we sort of said, okay, so how do we create Gandhi neural networks in all of us, or at least try to?
Mm-hmm.
And social-emotional learning kind of fitted very well in that. And then we kind of looked at what are the foundational competencies. And we always say competencies because the neurosciences says we have to train our brain.
Yes.
And we always, our new vision is, the Institute just went through one of these visioning exercises. We made it very simple, building kinder brains. Sounds simple,
wow.
But extremely difficult.
Yeah.
We all know that.
Good idea, but tough to do. Yeah, exactly.
Tough to do. Simple concept, but extremely tough. And everybody was saying, oh, those are fuzzy stuff. I said, no, it's not fuzzy stuff. It's supported by good, hard science and evidence. And
right.
It really, and it brings, you know, we feel good. And it's something natural. And I always sort of say, pull back on the sense that it's we are neurologically wired to be kind, but I always say that we have been so intelligent that we have created a system that goes against our very nature.
I would actually agree with you on that. And, you know, I just want to say something else, if I may. What you're saying, and I have a degree in education, okay, like most teachers and ex-teachers do, and I'm sure you do too, okay? But my degree is a BS. It's a Bachelor of Science. And too often we forget, I know you're going to get into this in detail, that education is a science, all right? And there is some art involved, but it is a science. And we understand how people, we're starting to understand, if I may, how people learn. That's neuroscience. And what you're saying all fits into everything, what we can be if we apply all that to what we're doing. Please continue, Dr. Duryapa, please.
Well, great. I was, for a while, when you said BS, I thought you were going to say bullshit, but thank God you were saying Bachelor of Science.
I made that joke when I graduated college, okay? But I tried to clean it up for the sake of the podcast, but that was my joke when I graduated, I got to tell you. Thanks for bringing it up.
So... You know, Larry, you know, I think you're one of the few enlightened ones from the education community which puts such a high value on science. We're just coming out of a 2.5-year project that we started off on trying to do like an IPCC-style kind of an assessment on education. I've not seen it done before. It's always you know, a certain discipline and stuff. So we tried on this, and we brought in social scientists, we brought philosophers, we brought the neurosciences. And it was interesting to see how many, many very prominent experts were sort of saying, what's the brain got to do with the whole notion of learning and education? And now,
hello.
I'm not an educationist. You know, my background is in economics. So I apologize for that.
You don't have
to. When you see an economist, they're like...
I can do that too. Supply and demand, guns and butter. Let's move on. Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
So, but it's got so much to say, but also the social sciences, in a sense, the whole notion of context plays such an important role, isn't it, doesn't it? Yeah, and we have to understand that. And by merging these disciplines, I think we get some really insights into how education systems are going to evolve. And, you know, Larry, about a couple of years ago, the UNESCO produces these seminal reports every 25 years or so. I'm not sure if you have heard of the Delors Report. That's the more famous one, the pillars of education and stuff.
Go ahead.
All right.
Talk about
so they produce these things, but these are very visionary, philosophical documents, which we all kind of know that this is what we should do. But at the end of the day, we get back into the nuts and gritties of getting numeracy, literacy, and getting people ready for the job market. And I sort of say our focus has just been on human capital. And And I don't think humans are basically born into this world just to be cogs into a production system. There's more to life than that. And that's one of the first things that the assessment, and so the whole notion of human flourishing evolved. It's not a new concept, but many, many different types of definitions and perspectives. But the experts that got together, and I like the way they define flourishing. If you allow me, let me just read that definition, because it's loaded. And it's, so human flourishing is both the optimal continuing development of human beings' potential. I want to emphasize the word potential,
mm-hmm.
and I'll talk a little bit more later, and living well as a human being, which means being engaged in relationships and activities that are meaningful,
mm-hmm.
that is aligned with both their own values and humanistic values in a way that is satisfying to them. So flourishing is conditional on the contribution of individuals, which means, you know, your flourishing is also conditional on the contribution of others as well. We don't live in a vacuum, do we? And it requires an enabling, enabling environment. So this is where, when we define it this way, values, humanistic values, what are those potential, and we can have a very cognitive exercise about this, but emotions, and I, you know, that's I think one of the things that I want to really emphasize today. And you kind of really alerted on social and emotional learning. Play a key role in it. And as an economist, you know, my training has always been on the rational being, and we always looked at it purely from a very cognitive aspect, using the information that we get and then thinking that we make our decisions based on a very systematic evaluation of the pros and cons, and we do that. But we don't. Without realizing it, a lot of it is also influenced by emotions. Some of us realize it, but many of us don't. It just becomes natural. And I think education has overlooked that. And there's a lot of evidence which sort of says that emotions influence learning, and learning influences emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Well. You know, what we learn is also influenced by emotions, and that's this whole field of work on heuristic biases. And a good friend of mine from the Descartes University in the Sorbonne in Paris done phenomenal work on this Gregoire Boss. And in terms of if you have those heuristic biases, those are emotions playing in the way that what you learn is already predisposed by biases that you already have. So, and we don't realize that. And I think the things that you see around the world happening, especially in the pandemic, the anti-vaccine, which is just a tip of the iceberg of a much more deeper seated problem, isn't it? And I think many of the recent op-eds in New York Times have talked about the growing inequality, the frustration, the anxiety, the fear of young people in terms of their social connections, their security. They feel that they've been forced into a system that they don't really feel like they want to be part of that, and they're trying to free themselves. So this is emotions play such a big role, and our education system hasn't really allowed us to. How do we train the brain in terms of handling those emotions? So let me
ask you this.
So that's
let
what
me
I
ask
mean
you this. One of the
yeah.
challenges we have, Adantra, one of the challenges we have is that, and I'll go back to when I was in school, which was many years ago, in college, okay? And if you look at the way education is taught, to teacher training, and you probably know this better than I do, around the world, okay? There's not a lot of science built into that.
No.
Okay, and that's I'll say neuroscience, if I may, okay, in that regard. The science of learning is not built in as well as it should be. Not like you train a medical doctor and you train him in the science of medicine or him or her. Dentistry, same thing, anything you want to talk about, okay? But education, we lack that. And then you add to that the whole of what you're saying, and by the way, I agree with you how emotions play an incredible part in how your brain works and how you learn, all right, and how we ingest information, all right? And there is very little training, in my opinion, going on worldwide for educators in this area. So we're constantly putting out the same thing we did, not taking all these advances, okay, into consideration as we pop out new educators worldwide. All right, and I noticed, I just was reading in this, you mentioned the New York Times earlier, that all the unrest that was just in Canada and has been in the United States and probably in other parts of the world as well has just now spread to New Zealand, okay, with the same kind of protests. It's literally around the world, all right? And the point is you're absolutely right. We're taking in information based on emotions, which we have to do. We are human. Okay, but schools, education has to pick up the ball on this. And as you sit in a seat where you can kind of look at the world, all right, and what are you seeing as you look at education, if I may, around the world in light of what you're saying with putting more emotional learning into it, which I think is incredibly important? What are you seeing?
I'm a little bit frustrated. I don't see that recognition by the decision makers, and they're caught up so much. They're just caught up with this notion of lost learning and lost earnings and so forth and so on, without realizing that how can a kid who's spent the last 2 years, especially in some countries with total lockdown, like in India, schools have been closed for more than about 2 years with a bit of, you know, short spurts of coming back, but again, been closed down. They are in an emotional tsunami. And then when schools start, the first thing that they have been subjected is getting ready for those exams which they have missed.
Well, now, and in some of the countries, here it's bad enough in the U.S., but in some of the countries like India, and China, if I may, the pressure on these children is beyond words, as you well know.
Beyond words. And the statistics are staggering. You know, the WHO keeps on coming with the mental health issues as among the younger generation, it's the second highest killer disease, as they call it.
Yeah.
And we're not doing anything about it.
Yeah,
and,
we're not.
You know, I was really shocked. And I was really shocked, like, if only the really well-to-do and rich can afford the kind of therapy that they need. Our insurance systems don't support it. The school systems don't support it. The teachers are not equipped to handle it.
They are not.
But the good news is the teachers are welcoming it. It's the administrators that need to, because they're not in the front lines, are they, Larry? They don't see that, but the teachers see them,
mm-hmm.
and they empathize with the kids. But again, they have pressures from the top down saying that you've got to meet these numbers. You know, you've got to get these kids, so many kids passing these exams. You've got to get so many kids into these schools that they make a big fuss about how well the sister or the school is doing. So I see the promising sign that our first defenses are the teachers, and the studies that come out is and I think this is how we will have to call it. I don't really like using numbers. I don't like really using economic numbers.
I was going to say you're an economist. You have to use numbers. Go ahead.
I know. Yeah, I know. My colleagues call me a disgruntled economist or a misplaced economist. but you know, when it comes to mental health, it shouldn't be economic numbers. It's people, isn't it? So we should be we should be not putting that into the equation. But if we come back to the numbers, the return on investments are huge, and any finance minister or somebody who's allocating the budgets who say, my God, the returns range from 4 to 14, this is a good investment. And if you just look at academic success, you see a drastic increase of 7 to 11 points. And this is... So we have this teachers, SEL for teachers, and we have been running this for about a year and a half. And we have
is that the Mahatma Gandhi Institute?
The Institute, yeah. And of course, we're partners, like-minded partners, because
of course.
It's so huge that our bandwidth is limited, but with partners, we can reach out to these. And there's a fantastic network of schools in India which the government supports. It's for rural, impoverished kids. It's boarding schools, and they do very well. But they also have some problems with the issues that we are talking about. And we've started teaching training the teachers. A 10-week intervention, and this is not like full time, it's just a couple of hours a week, has already produced results that are astounding. And the teachers are hungry for it. And they say, why haven't we given this? And then when you teach them about the brain and you talk about the chemical imbalances, what's happening and stuff, they say, oh, my God, this is so relevant to what we do in the classroom. So
exactly.
They are hungry.
Exactly.
We have the science. We have the evidence. We now need to get action. And that's what the Institute is really focusing on. Is to convince the policymaker on this is a good investment, this is a high return on your investment, and you get a double whammy or a double dividend, because they're just worried about human capital and academic success. You get that. But what you get, and I'm going to use some economic jargon, you get a positive externality of really happy children who are going to become good humans who really would, the whole notion of being kind to the other, and they don't see this as a purely competitive. They help their fellow students to improve as they are. So, but we have a 300-year-old system which is just entrenched in this old mindset.
Right.
So, and you have vested interests who want to keep that as well. Yeah, I love the book that Daniel Markovitz recently wrote on the meritocracy trap, and how he sort of says that the concept of meritocracy, which was touted as the great social equalizer or equity equalizer, has actually backfired, and it's actually created a whole new. I think he uses the word heritage meritocracy. So it's like the new aristocrats, and we got to be very careful about that, because I think a lot of because I think a lot of the stuff that's going around the world in terms of demonstrations about anti-vaccine, that's not the real issue. People are frustrated. They're just they see that they're not. They just have to work continuously. They're just making day-to-day ends meet, and education is not providing the kind of defenses with these uncertainties that I think, unfortunately, we are going to have to live as we go forward in the 21st century.
You're absolutely right, and the demonstrations that you were just saying, and I think I just read about the Markowitz's book, because I read an article actually again in the New York Times about the protests in Canada. And a lot of that has to do with meritocracy and demonstrations against that, against Justin Trudeau and all the people who I'll call, for the sake of this conversation, an elitist level. Okay, while the people, okay, who had to do all the hard work during their pandemic, we were all safe. I was here with my computer in my office, okay? But the UPS guy had to deliver my Amazon stuff. He wasn't as safe.
Yeah.
And I don't blame him when you start thinking about it for being angry. And that's the whole emotional thing of what's going on right now, all right? And we've got to take this into consideration as the world changes and education changes, okay? That there's a different world. The pandemic brought out a lot of challenges. Okay, and things must change. So let me ask you this, okay? The Gandhi Institute, obviously, from what I understand, you're working in India on all this. Are you working here in the U.S.? Where else are you working on all this? Who needs to get in touch with you?
So our mandate is primarily, what I say is that Asia-Pacific is my playground. but I but we reach out to the towards anybody who is who invites us to come in. So Colombia has been extremely receptive, and we have been working with Colombia.
They're
very
good.
Fantastic, we had a fantastic program with a school in the Midwest in the United States, and it was on global citizenship education. They had an online dialogue, and they had fantastic. And then we brought two kids and their teacher from these five countries into Delhi, and it was just amazing to see the barriers just collapsing within an hour or two.
They do,
and then you know, the children don't see color, the children don't see differences.
Right.
They just see each other, and then we kill that very quickly through our systems. And I think education plays a major role in that. As I say, emotions dictate the way what we learn, and then they start to see the divisions as they grow older. My great hero in education, Ken Robinson, always sort of says, "If you want to kill creativity, send your kid to the school."
Yeah, he died last year. It's a tragedy. Yeah. Terrible.
I know. We dedicated one of our we have a magazine called The Blue Dot, and we dedicated one on towards him. He was a great person.
Yeah, he was. And you know what you just said is very interesting. In the old Rodgers and Hammerstein Broadway show called South Pacific, which was written after the war, World War II, there's a song in there. And that show, by the way, is about racism and bigotry. Okay, that's the theme of that show. And there's a song in there that called "You've Got to Be Carefully Taught." And the lyrics of that is that you've got to be taught to hate and fear, to hate all the people your relatives hate. You've got to be carefully taught, because, like you said, Anantha, you're not brought into this world with this kind of hatred. Okay, and with these things changing, okay, I do believe it's up to the schools, and we don't have to force this down people's throats, okay, and make them feel guilty, okay, like that's not what we're trying to do, but you've got to alert people, okay, and the other thing is this world is getting smaller and smaller. We deal with people from all over the world every day. Everybody does. All right, and we got to understand people. There are differences, but the differences are good, and the differences are fun. And you put them together, you've got what's called civilization, which is really, really a good thing. When you go into a school, what do you folks do? What's the training like when you talk about this?
So when we do social emotional learning, we don't really go in and sort of say what social emotional learning is and all that. That's a purely cognitive exercise, and we have enough of that. So what we do is we take an issue. So it could be climate change, it could be extremism, it could be violence, or even something called, we have a module on identity, and sort of saying, so what does that mean? So it's a very inquiry approach that we take. And as the dialogue progresses, we introduce things like so it's sort of saying, okay, at some point, so how do you feel? What are your emotions? And then we put some emojis and stuff. And then we sort of say, okay. Then we have a certain thing where I say, okay, measure your heartbeat. And then we have a video where you tune your heartbeat, and they say, okay, let's turn it down a bit. And then you sort of focus on the dial on the video, and then you sort of then focus on your heart and sort of saying, you know, seeing whether it's slowing it down and breathing and all that stuff. And then we say, all right, how do you feel? And then they put their emojis up and stuff and say, great, now let's continue. And then we go into that, and then we have dialogues in terms of perspective taking and sort of say, and one of the things that we really find that nobody listens these days. You ask somebody to, and then they come back and say something totally different. And then the person says, no, that's not what I was telling you. And you know, people already have in their mind what they want to say, so they just wait for their opportunity. And so we start teaching kids to say, listen,
Yes.
And then sort of saying, put yourself in that person's shoe.
Yes.
How would you feel? And so forth. And then we turn it around and then go. And then we don't stop then. And then we say, okay, fine. So what are you going to do about this? And then we try to get some class activities going on, which they actually have to do, and then write a report and come back with activities and stuff like that. So we have things on migration, one of the biggest issues.
Well,
you know, one of the things that I came out after seeing one of this is that we had kids. We just did this. The first one was in India. We had kids from very, very elite, prestigious schools coming from very, very rich families. And then we had kids from the public schools. And then we had kids from the slum. And then we had translators because some of them couldn't speak English. And, you know, two things came out that just astounded me. And I said, we have done our job. One is the very rich kids were saying, oh my God, we didn't know that these kids were smart. I was like, huh? Because
exactly.
They thought that
exactly.
They couldn't speak. Yeah, they couldn't speak English,
right.
So they were not smart. But these
That's
kids
right.
were really, you know, sharp and on the ball. And they were asking really pertinent questions. The second thing was, it was on migration. And, you know, many of the kids from the slums, the parents were actually rag pickers, the people who pick up all the garbage, sort it out, and they were very embarrassed and stuff. And then we started talking about how important these people are. So we sort of said, what happens if they don't pick it up? You got to do it. And then we started talking about how it feels and stuff. And then all the kids had a higher level of respect, and especially the kids from the rich society were saying, you know, next time I'm going to go and have a chat with this person. I'm going to talk to them instead of just dismissing them. And the kids of those parents who were doing that had a little bit more pride in what their parents were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
That itself, I thought, was, hey, I think we've done our job. It's an act of
right.
kindness itself for people to have respect of their parents as well as others having respect for these people. I think that's what our school systems should be doing in terms of
that's right.
respecting somebody for the person that they are and not from all the basis of their backgrounds and stuff.
And so you said you know, that you're very concerned, okay? And again, you look at it from a worldwide perch, okay? This is huge. Where are we, in your estimation, and what's the best path forward? How do we get policymakers, like chief state school officers, okay, like directors of education of varied states of India, okay? How do we get them to actually get this going? What are you hearing? And we got about 5 minutes left, so go ahead.
So
change the world in 5 minutes.
Anantha,
change the world in 5 minutes.
All right.
Go ahead. Yeah.
give me the next Nobel Prize, all right? Well, Larry, I think we had a really high economies of scale when we were able to influence the new education policy. So social SEL as a term is now in the new education policy of India, which means once it's there, we can use that now and go into schools and say, hey, you have, because they have been given a mandate to implement the new education policy.
Yes.
And it's been very successful. At a higher education, we are getting universities just signing up. We can't keep up with the number that they're coming up to sign agreements with us to introduce our course at the university level for social emotional learning, which we did together with Life University from the United States, actually, which basically based on a lot of the Dalai Lama secular ethics kind of an approach. So, and then at the school level, which was very reluctant before on this whole SEL, when we say, look, it's in the new education policy, you're going to be judged against that. Now, of course, the best solution would have been that they really felt intrinsically that this was important. But the next best solution is there's a policy that's going to push them. So it's a combination of the two. You have champions there, identify those champions, go with them, but then influence. And that's where the Mahatma Gandhi Institute has a bit of a leverage,
yeah.
because we are part of UNESCO and these countries are members of the UNESCO. So once we, so we have a better inroad
right.
into that policy
right.
making. And so
yes.
we're going to try to do that in most of those countries. But the United States already has that. And in fact, I think the new Secretary of Education identified SEL as a key component in school education. Canada has that already. I know British Columbia education policy has SEL built into it. A good colleague of ours, Kimberly Smith, was part of that whole thing from CASEL and others. So,
let me make the point, SEL is not indoctrination. This is not indoctrination. There's a pushback with SEL, okay, about it's indoctrination. It is not, okay, and you certainly know that. And it's just, it's an unbelievable pushback that I just can't believe. It's nuts.
Yeah, and it's just like numeracy and literacy. When we say we are changing the neural network, we say, oh, my God, you're manipulating the brains. And it's like, don't you do that with your maths and comprehension? Because neural networks will get created. So it's the same thing. It's a competency, and it's a good thing. So
that's what people. That's what educators do. We manipulate the brain. Okay, that's exactly what we do. Yeah, thank you. That's the definition.
Yeah.
Right. Unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. You folks are doing wonderful work. We can do more together. Let's stay in touch on all this if we can. Is that all right?
Yes, for sure, Larry. And thank you very much for having me. I had a great time.
I had a great time, too, and you are really something. Just keep up the good work, I got to tell you. You're doing magnificent work worldwide. We'll be in touch. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take
care.
Thank you.
Take
care.
Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Dr. Duryapa, okay, Anantha Duryapa, okay, and I have everything spelled out, et cetera, on the website, okay? And if you want to get in touch, I'll give it to you, but I have it in the description here. MGIEP, Mahatma Gandhi Institute, okay, for Education for Peace, MGIEP.UNESCO.org. You can go over there. And he's got a whole thing on building kinder brains. It's an amazing man leading an amazing thing and an economist. Think about that. So you take that science, put it towards this. Just imagine, okay? Just incredible. All right. Thank you. It's just great. Thank you, Dr. Duryapa. And we're going to archive over at ace-ed.org. My name is Larry Jacobs, Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.